Good morning, fellow Nach enthusiasts. Today we're going to be doing Perek Yud Tes, the 19th Perek of Melachim Beis. And this is a Perek which really should be a model for our own lives. This is something which is so inspirational, yet so real. It's so real about how we try to avoid tragedy, how we try to avoid crisis. Chizkiyahu is confronted with a terrible crisis. At this point in time, his messengers have come back from outside of the city. This terrible fellow, Rav Sheka, who's the general of the Assyrian army, is standing outside, taunting them, telling the people they shouldn't trust in Chizkiyahu, telling Chizkiyahu he shouldn't trust in God, and he basically saying, taunting him, what do you have? Who are you going to rely on? There's nowhere you can turn. What does he do? How does Chizkiyahu respond to this? So the first thing he does is he tears his clothes. And then he turns to the prophet of the time, Yeshayahu ben Amoz, the Navi. We're going to see that Yeshayahu, it runs parallel to the destruction of the northern kingdom and Chizkiyahu's rule. As we get there, God willing, soon, this will give us a lot of context for understanding Yeshayahu. And he says to him, please, Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu, maybe Hashem heard the cries of Rav Sheka, maybe he heard the terrible things that were being said. Maybe Hashem will at least have mercy because he heard of all the terrible things that he was being cursed by this terrible human individual. So off they go to Yeshayahu, the messengers go to Yeshayahu Anavi, and Yeshayahu says, tell Chizkiyahu the following, I heard him cursing me, and I'm going to do something very simple. I'm going to give him news that there's internal unrest up north, back in Assyria, and Rav Shakeh is going to have to go back, and he's going to fight the Ethiopians, because Tirhaka, the king of Kush, of Ethiopia, is going to be fighting against him, and he's going to have to go back to his land, and there Rav Shakeh is going to be killed. And this is the message. He says, Yerushalayim is never going to be given up for you, Hashem is going to protect you. That's the messenger and the message. And in fact, Chizkiyahu prints Svarim, or rather manuscripts that he sends out among the people, telling them about this Besorah, about this message. And the Mefarshim actually say that what this means is that that Assyria had brought messages that had obviously written out curses of Israel and distributed them as psychological warfare, and Chizkiyahu transforms those by the message of hope that he's printing out. Of course, propaganda is a very important part of warfare. But it's interesting, this is not the end. At this point in time, if you'd received this message, you'd be like, yes, fantastic. You'd go out into the hammock, you'd kick your legs up, drink the pink lemonade, and you're done. That's not what Chizkiyahu Melech does. Chizkiyahu Melech turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he prays fervently. And he says, Hashem, Yoshev HaKruvim, who sits among the hosts of angels, Hashem, you're the only power in all the heavens and the earth. Listen to us. Open your eyes. Save us. Help us. Show them that all the other gods didn't protect the other nations, but you protect ours and you're going to save us. And he makes this pure, pure prayer. Chizkiyahu does not take anything for granted. He does not think because he's got a nevuah that that's the end and everything's fine. He goes the extra step. And now Yeshayahu returns with a second nevuah. And Yeshayahu gives a very beautiful and poetic nevuah. If you have a chance to read it, it's in Psukim Chof, all the way down basically to Pasuk Lamed Dalet. And this is going to be very reminiscent of a lot of the other prophecies we're going to see in Yeshayahu. And he basically says, this time is really addressing Rav Shakeh or the Assyrians themselves, and he says, I heard your taunts. I heard you saying that I'm helpless and that you're in charge over here. He says, well, let me tell you something. Read history. Read history. Read what happens to the people who play with my nation. Read what happens when people taunt me. He says, you want to pretend that you're the master and I'm the servant. So I'm going to put the iron through your nose and lead you. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to him and says, I'm going to make sure that you're going to be vanquished. And then he turns to Chizkiyahu and says, V'zelecha ois, this is going to be the sign this is going to happen. This year you're eating sfiach. Sfiach is kind of what grows naturally by itself. V'ashana ha'shenis shesachish, which is like the remains. V'ashana ha'shenis zero v'kitzur v'nitzu kramim. In the third year, you're going to be planting again. This is obviously a reference to the siege. When they're under siege, there's nothing to eat. They can just eat what grows out of the cracks in the, and out of the just the remains of the field, because the fields have been burned down in sieges. Don't worry, there's coming a time you're going to be able to eat from the fields and reap once again. And this is exactly what happens. This is the description. So the army's outside, and Hashem sends a malach, which hits the camp of Ashur. There are 180,000 soldiers surrounding Jerusalem, a colossal army, and every single last one of them are killed in one night by this force, by this angel. Chasanchirev, the king of Ashur, returns to his capital Nineveh, and he's killed by his two sons, Adar Melech and Sharetzar, who then escape and flee from the country. And this is the end of the parak. Miraculous, miraculous ending. Few things to think about here, just considering this parak as a whole. And that is, one is just a basic timeline issue. You know, it sounds like there's Rav Shakeh, and then at the end of the parak it sounds like Sancheriv. So who is it? Sancheriv is the king, Rav Shakeh is the general. It sounds like there's two things going on over here. It sounds like having to return to Assyria on the one hand, but then it sounds like the army being smitten outside Yerushalayim. So what is it? So the Radak points out, all other Mephoshim point out, that what happens over here is there's really two stages. The first thing that's going to happen is the first prophecy of Yeshayahu, which is the siege is going to be lifted. Rav Shakeh, this terrible human being, is going to go back to Assyria, and he's going to have to fight and contend with the Ethiopian armies of Tarheka of Cush, and he's going to vanquish them. But in that fighting, he himself is going to be killed. So Rav Shakeh is now out of the picture. But then the army is going to return. They're going to return from their success against Ethiopia, defending the home front, not now the general, but Sancheriv, the king himself. They're going to now return laden with more wealth, laden with victory. Why did it have to go in two stages, says the Radak? Well, very simple. We can't ask Hashem's ways, but in retrospectively, we can see a little bit of an inkling that they're going to have much more money when they leave behind after they die. That's number one. And number two is, this nation, which has just finished vanquishing another superpower, is now going to fall without a weapon outside the walls of Yerushalayim. It's going to magnify this miracle to an extent which wouldn't have been possible if simply they ran away, or simply if Rav Shakeh was quelled for a moment. It gives a little bit more meat and perspective to this. Another few things just to be aware of is that Chazal tell us that this date, that this colossal miracle occurred, was on the night of Pesach, and that's why they sang a certain Shira on the night of Pesach. There is a criticism in Chazal that if Chizkiyahu had sung Shira correctly and at this moment in time, he himself would have been Mashiach, and that would have been the end of days. We're thinking about other times in our history where we had military victories and we didn't sing Shira, and the potential that could have possibly been. Even in our more recent times, 1967, 1948, with the perspective of this particular episode. Last thing just to think about is, why was it that Sancheriv was killed by his sons? What was this whole the whole business of him being murdered by his sons while he's bowing down back in Nineveh? So the Mephoshim tell us, the Radak points out, that when he went back, he said, I can't believe this. How was it that I lost to this nation? What's their schus? And his people said, yeah, well, you know, they got this thing called the Akedah. They did the Akedah of Yitzchak. So Sancheriv got into his head this idea that maybe if he sacrifices his sons, we saw earlier on by Moav trying to do the same thing, maybe I'll have the schus to win my wars. And that's when his sons realized that they weren't prepared to be his korban, and they killed him first. Terrible, terrible idea over here. It also shows you a lack of self-awareness. Over here, Sancheriv is not recognizing that it's God who is in power, but rather he's thinking that it's whoever does the more quaintest ritual. And that's ultimately his failing, his inability to be able to understand what really is going on over here. This is one of the greatest victories of Israel's history. It gives us on a real high, and it gives us a perspective of understanding the great depth of Chizkiyahu, who never for a moment rested on his laurels. And we're going to see further now some of the more the travails and the ups and downs at the end of his life. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.